And welcome to the HalfGuarded.com Power Hour. I'm your host, Mitch Pump, or whatever name I'm using. My co-host, Dan Board.
Happy Memorial Day to everybody.
Happy Memorial Day.
Hope you had a great
This is the day. Yeah, this is the day where we celebrate the loss of Harambe.
Oh, right? Okay, that's a thing that happened?
It was on Snapchat, the only social network I'm currently using. So it was a thing.
Snapchat.
It's been 2 years, Dan. 2 years since Harambe was brutally taken from us.
His untimely passing.
And we were given one of the weirdest memes ever, Dan. Kind of tells you how weird 2016 was, because Harambe was the rare double dip meme, where it was popular, kind of a, you know, not the biggest thing. Died off, and they came back like 2 weeks later as the biggest fucking thing ever.
Yeah, I never understood why Harambe was a thing. I gotta be honest.
It was a weird... That was a weird year for me.
And there seems like something vaguely racial.
You know, someone pointed that out, but it's not racial. It's because it's three syllables. Things with three syllables are funny. Harambe. Seattle.
Seattle.
It's a funny word.
Oh man, I love how funny Seattle is.
That's a Simpsons joke. Classic one. But they, what is it? Chukabunga. You know, those are just, if they're three syllables, they're funny. That's the little rules of comedy. Now that I'm off social media, I got all this wisdom.
Sure. Instead of like draining off your posting, yeah. You know, you get to store it up. It's basically like NoFap. But
yeah. That I am essentially doing the like NoFap version. The normal NoFap version. You still do social media. And like I don't miss like really anything about it, Dan. I was thinking about this the other day. I mean, there are things I do, but what I don't miss is like comments from people. Like especially like woke people who have to like ruin everything. You know, like why are the crows in Dumbo racist? Like, I don't care. I know they're racist.
Because it was made 1950
next. Yeah, I don't need to feel bad about that, you know?
You mean so, media made in 1941 has a few racial issues to it?
Yeah, like fucking media made in like 2005 has incredible. Like 24 is like the most racist show ever. I know that. I don't need to read a fucking tweet storm about it every week, you know? That's what I don't miss. I don't miss woke Twitter at all.
You don't miss UGG white people about literally everything?
The caucasity. And it's just like, man, just leave us alone.
I remember, what have
we really done?
Yeah, there's one thing you missed, like Chapo Amber, uh-huh. Amber Ali something. Chapo made a comment that on social media that, you know, basically the way woke people talk about white people is exactly the same as white supremacy, just in reverse. But they're basically furthering like all of this. Like,
so she just did the reverse racism on it.
No, it's literally all the, like they've accepted all the same argument. They just flipped them, which means they're not really attacking white supremacy. They're just inverting it.
Agreeing with that. Well, like, remember, like, the woke thing was, like, interracial dating was racist somehow.
Like, yes, miscegenation is cultural appropriation.
I think the other best one, though, are, like, trans people who get, they're like, oh, cis gays, enough of this, they're our oppressors. And it's like, really?
Yeah.
Really?
I think that's, like, the TERF thing is such a big issue in that community, like, fighting the TERFs.
Yeah.
That it's turned them into, like, literally, they're willing to point the guns at anybody else on their own side.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, TERFs are scum, so go with it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. Dan, before we get into what I'm going to title The Ballad of Mark Rick, Part 1. You like that for the show title?
Yeah, sure. I like that. It's a good
title. I kind of want to look at Mark Rick, but we're going to go in reverse. We're going to kind of start with the end. I want to catch something in the middle. And then I want to kind of get to the beginning, maybe kind of go back to his time. And it would be the timeline for this. There's no... Next week, we're not going to do another Mark Rick thing. It's just so you know, as a listener. We're not done with this man and his beautiful hair quite yet.
The hair wasn't quite so beautiful in this...
At this point, no. But I feel like, Dan, when we really take the deep dive back to 20 years ago, we're going to see some nice hair. But I think at this point, Saban's hair is kicking his ass.
Yeah. This is the point where he's still trying to hold on. But it's...
Yeah.
It's like, come on.
Oh, man. But, Dan, let's start. Let's stay in the sports world right now. Just cut to this. Did you see the news on Richie Incognito?
He had a freak out in a gym?
Yeah, he said he thought the government was following him. Pretty clear that he's got this
complaint. Yeah, or he's...
But it's kind of funny.
Or he's got
a
drug. Like, something.
Yeah.
Something.
Well, probably, I mean, he's an NFL offensive lineman. He may have had some brain damage. I just got a crazy notion on that one. I'm not a doctor, but... I would imagine there's probably some old CTE drama.
Yes. Speaking of woke people, like, you know, I'm not defending anything Richie Incognito did, but like, for whatever reason with that guy, when he started doing like fucked up weird things, everyone was like, oh, burn him, instead of going, probably a guy who's like,
yeah,
this is someone who's exhibiting all of the signs. And like, you had two people involved in that Jonathan Martin thing back in the day who both seem to have severe brain trauma, you know, especially looking back now.
Didn't Martin just, did he kill himself or something?
He just threatened to go shoot up his old school and he was arrested.
Right. So, yeah, maybe football, a game that we glorify here on this podcast, maybe it's not the best thing in the world.
Yeah, especially offensive line. Like, there's a lot of brain
trauma. Maybe there's a way to fix that. I say no helmets. Give me the money.
We go back to the old way of blocking where you have to, like, you can't come forward. And
make it just more about, like, fucking, you know, strength, chest, men's, you know, bench presses against each other.
That's what
I want to see.
Or put weight money on the position so that football players can't be, like, 300 pounds and fast, because that's probably having something to do with it as well. You've got the players keep getting so, especially on the lines, they keep getting so much bigger and yet still so fast. That, you know, that's a lot of force.
PEDs, it feels like PEDs, like any sport should really be like a little better about testing for, should probably be football. Like baseball, everyone should be doing this. It's stupid.
Yeah.
Basketball, sure.
Go for it.
Yeah, dope or whatever. I want to see LeBron James play 60 minutes every game.
With football, but, with football and fighting, it's like, oh boy, this is helping you somebody harder. Like, this is helping you, like, scramble these brains.
You just say,
hey, you can't play offensive line if you weigh more than 250. Then the guy's got to cut weight like a fucking fight.
Yeah.
Which that was...
Apparently
everybody...
Really will be the...
Everybody was overweight for the UFC. Nobody was able to make weight, which...
Have fun with that investment, ESPN.
We gotta talk about that.
Yeah. Let's get into it now. So how much money are they getting total? Like, $1.5 billion?
They're getting $300 million for a number of years. But... It's a little misleading in the sense that they're only getting $150 million a year for them. So they are making less than WWE's making.
Well, where's the extra money?
The other 100 is for them to basically be the only everybody signs up for.
Okay.
So they're getting $150 million TV contract and $150 million ESPN Plus contract.
Do you think anyone really will still sign up for ESPN Plus?
Yeah, I mean...
Because I feel like the gimmick there, though, would have been, like, that's where I put, like, my Mountain West Conference football games.
Well, then nobody would have bought it. Like, there's not enough.
Well, gamble it. Well, Dan, Supreme Court ruling.
Yeah, but there's just not. There's just
ago.
There's not enough people who care about that content in a big way. Like, ESPN Plus is going. Like, UFC. And we saw it with UFC on FS2/2s. Like, that network had never gotten into watching to qualify to be rated by Nielsen until they put UFC on it. And then suddenly they were doing like 89.
But this is different, Dan, because now this UFC fan can't watch the show at his grandmother's house or at his girlfriend's place. He's got to use a real-life credit card or debit card that he may not have. This is an MMA fan in 2018.
Well, an MMA fan.
Not to insult some of our base.
MMA fans in 2018 are like in early 40s. You know.
Yeah, I mean, still living at their parents' house.
They got. I mean, they're not. They're pretty affluent as far as all things go. Yeah.
Aren't they all, like, on welfare?
That's what
I heard.
That's wrestling.
Unlike wrestling fans.
That's wrestling fans.
You all have their masters.
Yeah.
No, wrestling fans all have their masters. They are on welfare, but they all have their masters.
Sure, they all got their welfare. They all got their masters of social work. They're kind, caring people with no money. That's obviously the average wrestling fan. But, no, the things we're already hearing, it looks like Ultimate Fighter is done. I mean, it doesn't look like ESPN's interested in it, which... That's like 10 years overdue. Yeah. I'm interested in how much... I mean, we saw when UFC moved to Fox, they were used as the guinea pig to try to get over Fox Cable Sport.
Yeah.
Like, they were used to build FS1. And I think... UFC, why they were interested to get off Fox is they felt like they got... Like, they thought they were getting all this extra exposure because they thought they were going to be able to do all these specials on Fox Network TV.
Well, to be fair, though, it's not like their specials kind of bomb.
Well,
right?
that's the flip side. They were put on Fox Network, didn't do that good a rating.
Well, Dan, I think it gets to the heart of, like, why these, like, kind of pay-per-view-driven, like, marquee sports can never work in these big events on broadcast because you're giving away too much money if you put, like, a fight people want to see yeah. on Fox.
You can't give people the stars they really want.
Like, if you put Conor McGregor in just a know-nothing fight on Fox, it would probably do, like, 5 million, like, ridiculous ratings for
you. But that would never do as much as on paper.
Exactly. And you couldn't really even put him against a tin can, because then what if he loses?
Although, friend of the show, Dave Meltzer, has made the argument mm-hmm. that it might be time, like, we might be at the point where WWE can make more money selling WrestleMania to a network and saying, all right, give us a rights fee, like Super Bowl. Because he said at this point, the network doesn't make nearly as much money as pay-per-view, you know, off of a single event.
Or sell it to Facebook. Or, you know, I think the negotiations for the WWE TV stuff, what were the big names? Like Facebook and Amazon.
Amazon and Facebook are the reason why they got, because they offered godly for WWE.
So, but you think they might offer for WrestleMania,
I see no way.
Because that's a tweetable event. Like, that's for WrestleMania.
I think that's the future of WrestleMania. WrestleMania is either be on a free, like, they're going to be like the Super Bowl where anybody can watch WrestleMania. I think that's the future. And somebody's going to give them a shit ton of money to do it. And I'm with UFC.
And, like,
I don't, UFC does not have that kind of single marquee. They're, like, UFC's built the same way as boxing, where the big money drawing event is whenever a fight comes across. They can't.
It's not like it's not scheduled. It's not an annual. Yeah.
This is our biggest show of the year.
Especially like when I think about like putting a WrestleMania on Facebook or whatever. When you look at like your Twitter feed or whatever else during WrestleMania, especially if you follow people in sports, everyone's talking. Like people who you wouldn't think would be wrestling fans are watching WrestleMania are talking about it. So I kind of get why Facebook, especially, would be interested. Talk about engagement. You know, literally maybe millions of people watching that around the world.
And then you also
the ads you can sell.
You also just get into the fact that like Facebook's not doing so hot right now. If you've not been into the news, like there's these major like cancel Facebook campaigns going on. Their number of subscribers, like active users per year, has been going down for like 2 years now.
Can I point out? I left Facebook around 3 years ago for all of this. Does it make me cooler than everybody? Yeah, it does.
So where do I factor in that I stopped you for anything except login? Do I get any cred for that?
No, you're just lazy. Just make your own logins.
But then I got to remember.
If it's something that doesn't matter, just use like a dumb password for stuff your credit card is on. And for shit your credit card's on, use something complicated.
But then I got to remember. Not that
hard. Like if someone steals my like what's an example? Like some stupid account you have to do. Like my Spotify, who cares?
Yeah, but like I don't.
Or my Twitter account.
But, like, how am I going to keep up with random people that I knew in college who we've all switched phone numbers?
You pick up, you write him a letter, Dan. Get out the phone book.
That phone book. When's the last time you picked up a phone book?
They throw it in the trash and they drop it off in front of my
Because there used to be a time where that was considered a feat of strength to rip a phone book in half. Bro, I could rip a phone book in half now.
Yeah, they're made of 20 pieces. They're made of, like, yeah, and they're made of, like, leaf. They don't even bother printing, but it's just, like, a leaf with stuff printed. Yeah, I get them, like, every year, and they go right in the trash. I'm like, why did you waste them? I don't know.
Now, what is definitely worth the money is those subscriptions to, like, the whitepages.com, where you reverse look up anybody's phone number.
Yes.
Those
which you can pretty much do with the stalking. Google search. That's always fun. Or we need to get, like, we should get Yellow Pages to sponsor this podcast. We could really turn it around. Just don't let them hear this audio, but... Come on down. What are they calling? Like YP.com or something.
Like let your fingers do the hunting.
Ooh,
it's something that sounds vaguely like a reference note.
It feels like they missed their chance though when like the hipster thing was a lot bigger like 5 years ago.
Oh yeah, I have an artistic phone book.
Yeah, and just sold it to like fucking Brooklynites. And they probably would eat that shit up. Like I'll use an old school phone book
with a rotary phone.
Yeah. Well, doesn't that make things harder? Yeah, but it's better than trying. That's the definition of trying hard. And there's my 5-year-old rant.
Yeah, I do own the old timey stock where the thing's not connected, and you just got like a rotary at the base, and you got a big long thing that you hold up to your mouth, and then the thing that comes to your ear that you hold to your ear. I have one.
I don't even have a landline. I don't have that. I don't even have a cable line. Just internet here, baby.
And where I'm at, they charge so much for internet that the bundle of cable and internet's almost, like, for $10 extra, I can get cable, so why not?
$60, I get fiber.
See, we don't have fiber. Yeah. We don't have anything of that nature.
Fiber's pretty nice.
As anybody who's listened to this podcast and suddenly heard one of us go robotic, that's because my internet blows.
We're we're kind of like Green Acres. I'm Zsa Zsa Gabor. You're the guy.
Sure.
I forgot his name.
Zsa Zsa Gabor's husband.
Josh. One of her many. Dan, let's. You want to shift into our main focus this week, or do you have anything else about sporting?
Yeah, I just. I think the issue though for UFC, and it's something, you know, they're so excited that they're on ESPN, and there is a value to be on ESPN. Dana White, being typical Dana White, has admitted it out loud, which I'm not sure I would be since they're now your partner. But we're going to be covered on ESPN now because we're on ESPN, which yeah. I think he does make a good point when they were on Fox. Because nobody watched Fox. Nobody watches FS1 except for UFC, college football, NASCAR. And then as soon as those things are over, they turn off the TV. They don't
watch. Dan, you forget baseball playoffs.
Of course I forget that. Everybody else does too. But nobody watches there's nothing that anybody watches on the rest of that to help promote any. You're just watching what the event you're watching, and as soon as that event ends, you turn the channel. So you're not getting promotion from being on Fox Sports. So it's almost like you're in this black hole by being on Fox.
And, like, FS1 even tried all the old ESPN tricks, whether it was the barbershop shows with, you know, Skip Bayless. Or even, like, going back to the Keith Olbermann, Dan Patrick thing with those Canadian guys on their, like, SportsCenter recall. Just didn't work, because, A, no one's really watching SportsCenter anymore. And if you're not watching SportsCenter, you're probably not looking for an alternative.
Right. So, but
you know, I think we've gone into this in ad nauseum before, right. Though, like why FS1 was a failure, because it came at the worst possible time.
So being on ESPN, there is like a level of like awareness people are going to have of your sport that they didn't necessarily have before.
Yeah, like it's going to be on the front page, ESPN.com. You're going to have features all over programming.
But I also think in some respects, UFC really has been wrong-headed for like 10, 15 years now about what the best channel for them to be on is, because I think they should have tried to find another Spike TV that was just more people watching. Because you look at WWE, would WWE be better off on ESPN or being the only thing on USA that draws eyeballs, where USA basically caters their whole station around them until the point where WWE got a much better deal to go somewhere else, you know? Yeah. Where would you? Wouldn't you rather be the only thing on your network that anybody watches? So
would you rather be the big fish in the small pond?
You all of like look at the NBA on T. What the fuck else does T have
other than the NBA? Law and Order rerun. Bones.
Like
have you ever watched Bones, Dan?
I have not watched what's her name? Temperance. Out.
I don't know her name. She's a cute lady though.
She's Zoe Deschanel's older.
Oh really?
Yeah. Emily Deschanel.
Oh, you learned something. There you go.
And their mom was in the original Twin Peaks.
Oh.
I think she was the one in the wheelchair.
The wheelchair. Oh, right. But yeah, like, you know what, like, if UFC, let's say, like, the History Channel gave them, like, a shit ton of money to come up.
And that might not be the best thing, because that's such a big flip in demographics, but, like.
But is it, though? Because, like, I feel like the History Channel's. The
History Channel are all in their 50s. Like, yes, that's a big.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking more, like, conservative white people probably watch.
Yeah, it's all like everybody on who watches them are white. Okay. But what network
would you?
Let's say TBS. Yeah. You know, I would look at that more than I would have Fox to Sarah. Or you know, let's say WGN.
Do you even get WGN anymore?
I think WGN is just one of those stations that's on everybody's cable package that nobody watches. But they're in every cable package.
Did anyone ever watch WGN? Like what was the Suns Cubs games, Bulls games?
They tried to be TBS.
They just couldn't. Well, there's only one TBS. Because no one wants to watch the Cubs.
They didn't have wrestling.
They didn't watch the Atlanta Braves.
They didn't have wrestling. TBS had wrestling Andy Griffin.
You can't beat that. And, yeah, I'm trying to think of, like I can kind of see why Turner might not want to deal with UFC. Because they already got, they got NCAA basketball, MLB, they're kind of set there. But is there really a more viable home for them than like, realistically, when you kind of look at it, where else could they, like, the Family Channel, they're not going there. MTV?
MTV
not.
Wouldn't have been a bad choice for them back in the day.
MTV would have been, yeah. Oh, if it was, like, 2000, yeah.
Well, no.
I probably would have saved MTV.
It was, like, 2008. Like, think about, like, Jersey Shore era. And
yeah.
Like, that would have been a better choice than going to
but
Fox.
They were on.
But they were
yeah,
in,
they were
already
Spike,
in the
which
same,
is Viacom.
They were already
in
the same,
family.
You know, television. MTV wasn't going to bid against Spike. But, you know.
Or, like. Like, FX always felt like the natural.
But, you know, Fox didn't want them on FX. Fox wanted them to be the
FX
flagship.
FX doesn't do sports. Yeah.
But when they were on FX, they did much better ratings, and they ended up on FX.
Yeah.
Because people watched FX. Like, basically, everything Fox with their television property is a giant fuck-up.
It's a disaster.
They didn't need FS1 and FS2. They could have just put sports on FX. They didn't need FXX, because nobody even knows what the fuck that is.
It literally, you know what, FXX just literally shows The Simpsons every day. It shows...
It was going to be the home Simpsons of all their comedy.
Yeah.
Like, all of these attempts to, like, split comedy off from drama don't make sense, because all you end up with is, like, two networks that don't have enough programming to fill out a thing instead of having one that has...
One with lots of shit.
That has, you know, a bunch of programming. That, and then, you know, I mean, again, to give credit to He Who Must Not Be Named Again, the man in San Jose, like, one of the other stories about all of this, like, the UFC and the WWE TV deals is the extent to which USA has really collapsed.
Yeah.
Like, WWE, I mean, like, they paid WWE almost as much money that they paid for Raw and SmackDown just to keep Raw, even though they lost SmackDown. And even though they're keeping Raw, but anybody with a brain,
well, they're getting,
Raw is going to be the...
Yeah, because they're SmackDown getting Miz and Mrs.
You know, SmackDown is going to be on a
SmackDown's
going to be on
sold.
Fox. I'm sorry, SmackDown's going to be on the show. They're going to put all
No, but I'm not sold. I'm not sold that's going to work. Fox on Friday is notoriously the worst slot in history.
They have to make it work, or else they're going to be bumped off Fox, and they'll be knocked down to, like, FX.
Well, can they? Can they be? Oh, I guess they can move them around the network.
Like, so, if they don't draw, if they don't do good ratings, there's no such thing in television as a guarantee. Yeah. If they don't draw, they'll be bumped, you know?
Yeah, I guess you just be bumped. But, like, them going to FX, like, wouldn't be the worst. It would probably be the best.
But, like,
you get to keep the money and go to FX.
I mean, that would be a massive hurt. A massive
No, because you're going to move Ronda Rousey over there. You're going to move your stuff. You're probably going to move your Latin guys all over there to Leo.
Yeah, you want all your Latin
probably
guys
your
on
black,
TV.
You're going to put all your people of color on. Raw's going to be, like, white supremacist. It's going to be, like, almost segregated.
You can move Nakamura over there, because, like, Asian Americans, hi. You know.
They have cable.
Yeah.
They can afford that. Because they're bigger skulls.
Sure, they have, you know, they have a more developed brain.
The Amdullah Alamgada. But not all Samoans though. What are you gonna do? You're gonna have to move Roman Reigns to Fox.
I mean,
Samoans, too stupid.
Okay. He's gonna end up on SmackDown because they see him as their top guy, and they're gonna want all their top guys on network.
Yeah,
and they're gonna
want to be exposed
to a network television. They're gonna want the guys that they want everyone to see as their top stars to be on the platform that everybody can see. You know?
I'm interested to see how the WWE and Fox is gonna work. Friday's just such a bad TV, but I guess it doesn't matter because the way you can DVR proof SmackDown even with the box.
WWE's always done good on Fridays though. Like the stuff that you gotta stop thinking of WWE. It is. Like it's television for kids and old people.
You don't get more hip than
and
that.
And that's Friday night. And so like. You look at what typically does well on Friday night, it's cop shit, because the audiences are older. And WWE draws an older audience, so that's going to be great. And then you're going to have kids watching, you know, like 9-year-olds
who are
too young to go out on a Friday night.
So let's say you're running WWE. Would you make, like, Monday Night Raw more of, like, the hip, try to make that, like, the hip cool thing, and SmackDown's, like, your brand, like,
your corporate branding kind of thing? Your safe, conservative show. Yeah.
Like, that's your Coca-Cola, but you're doing fucking Surge with vodka over here on Mondays.
I mean, you have limit because you don't want to blow up your corporate partnerships, and you can't make, Raw cannot 1998 Raw. Because that's as much as everyone loves, like, the attitude and all that jazz, by 2000, WWE was having to drastically pull back their product because they were under.
Well, no, what I'm saying, like, do you do, like, the Bullet Club Bull?
You know, I mean,
is that
I think
the people
that
I want to
like
get?
Edgy.
Your
show that appeals more to your hardcore, which is ironic.
That's kind of what I mean.
Because
are
Raw
you doing, like,
is
are you
the casual, but that's gonna.
Were you gonna open up the checkbook for like Cody Rhodes to put him over?
Well, I mean, I think WWE gonna do that anyway.
Yeah, but like, you think like that would be what you have in mind, like to get that kind of that viewership back? The fucking black shirt wearing racial coalition that is the Bullet Club.
I do like how mad the people got. It was like your last.
So mad.
Your last.
That was
last,
my last.
Your
great.
Last great stand was just pissing on it in all those people's faces,
and then like talking about ironic next level trolling, and then like messing up the quotations, and then just like buying and hook line. It was just beautiful. Like I didn't even know what to do because I was like, I thought you would realize I'm just fucking, but that person did not. He thought I was being. First rule of the internet, kids: never believe anyone's telling the truth or being.
And the second rule is the girl online who says girls are awful is probably
probably
those
trans
are the top
man.
Two. No, they're just like some sitting in somewhere.
All these and everyone on the internet's from England. Never forget that. It doesn't make any sense. It's not even that big of a place. If they're all
there's 12 people in England, and they're all some weirdo who's bald who's pretending to be a woman online.
Ooh, like our boy Mark Wren.
And what was that other guy? That other guy used to board who would constantly, like, who would freak out about how... Okay, I gotta get into my favorite.
The Big Daddy guy?
That guy is a favorite. Haphazard is one of my favorite people on the internet. But my other favorite is people in England who think that the whole rest of the world knows about their weird little, like, inter-town squabbles about, like, North Hampshire upon Stoke upon another North Hampshire.
Well, they're just trying to be America.
Well, they think that, like, we all know about the rivalry that two towns in the middle of, like, North England, that literally nobody else outside of England even heard of those towns.
Yeah.
Or, like, they have derisive nicknames for each other, and they think we all know what those things are. And then have those here. Yeah. Like, okay, you have states that have conflicts, but those are, like, literally those states are about the same size as England is. Like North Carolina is like 85% the size of it. Georgia, I think, has more people in it. Like, if Georgia and North Carolina have a conflict, that's basically like France and England getting mad at each other.
Yeah. Well, think about this, though, Dan. Like, one of the most famous rivalries to come from Hatfields and McCoys. Two families. It's just we're just better at pumping up our culture than England is. Like, everyone knows everything about America. All the fucking movies. No one watches the English movies. That's a little fruity, you know? I think that's kind of the issue. They think they're America.
Well, deep down, the biggest issue is they still think they're an empire, a global empire that is important to the whole rest of the world when they're not. They're just like one reasonably important country in a continent of other countries. And that's why they've had this big freak out, and they've done Brexit, and they've done all this other dumb bullshit, because you've got this generation of people who still think they're important, and they're not.
Well, you know, it's funny you mention that. Speaking of a generation of people who thought they were important, let's shift on over.
That's how we segue. There is no other podcast in the world that can segue from the psyche of people in a fully declined empire to SEC football.
It's specifically Georgia football. And specifically, the tail end of Mark Richt's kind of run at Georgia. 2012 SEC championship game, Alabama versus Georgia. First off, Dan, what'd you think? This is a really good game, right? It's probably the best game we've watched so far, Phil.
Yeah, I mean, it was right down there to the wire. It was definitely better than the one we watched last. I will grant everyone that.
Wild stuff. Like, I've got I'm kind of watching the very end right now. Again, like, at the interception, that was almost there. You have Georgia coming, 3 yards short of the national championship, the SEC championship, and potentially the national championship.
Oh, whoever won that game would have won the national championship. Like,
it would have killed, because you look at the talent, but, like, way better than anything Notre Dame. And Notre Dame had a nice run that year.
Well, here was the issue with Notre Dame. And before I do want to lay this. When you talk about the 2012 seed, I did cover that whole seed for a Notre Dame fan site. And so I was literally watched every single second of Notre Dame then.
Yeah, and but their issue, though, was, like, defensive line, right? Like, they weren't that big.
Well, their issue was they had a very, 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 very good. Their defensive backfield wasn't that great, but because their front seven was so good during the season, their back seven never really got exposed because they could play, none of the safeties had to help.
Yeah.
And then when they played Alabama, they had played Georgia, they played, you know, some other name a top team that year. They had to have the safeties involved because that was another level of competition beyond which they had beaten that year. And once they weren't able to
play, and the running,
once they weren't able to play four deep every on defense, they weren't that difficult. It was just they were a really good defense that wasn't ready for.
Well, think about the running back competition on both these teams that we saw. Over in Georgia, you've got Gurley. On Bama, you've got Eddie Lacy and TJ Yeldon.
And Notre Dame, offensively that year, their quarterback play was, they couldn't run the ball. You know, they just weren't very good offensively. They were a really good defensive team with no offense that when they played an outstanding offense, they couldn't stop that, but they didn't get exposed to it. But looking back,
they were well coached, right?
They were well coached that got a little bit more they were a team that should have been 10-2, but because they just had every lucky break go their way that season, they ended up 12-0. And you know, there's people who go back and say, "Oh, it's bull crap." Notre Dame, that season of Notre Dame, there's 2 years that I think are the reason why we now have a playoff. The year before this, which ended with Alabama LSU, and then this year, because everybody knew Notre Dame wasn't good enough to in this against any of these National League teams. But what the fuck are you supposed to do? They're the only undefeated team. Like, you can't leave them out. It would have been that would have been insane.
Because they played their schedule. It's not
they
like...
And they didn't play like a...
They played Michigan. They played Michigan State. Yeah.
It's just...
USC.
You know,
well, all those programs happened to be down around that.
They caught a bunch of teams in down year. They got lucky in some games where they... Like, they beat Oklahoma. They beat the Big 12 champion that year.
Yeah.
It's just like they got lucky in some big games. They survived some games with teams they shouldn't have been on the field with, like Pitt almost.
Like what, Army, Navy?
Like they almost lost to, they needed a field goal to beat Pitt then. Like it just wasn't a very good team. Like you knew that this was a 10-win team that was flawed. And if they'd been a playoff, they would have lost to the, and then, you know.
Well, who would have been the 4 seed if we want to kind of
jump
back in time and look at that? Because I think even Georgia loses, but you keep Georgia in after this game. So
they
clearly,
would probably ended up 4.
And they probably would have beat Notre Dame. Yeah, they probably would have played
Notre
Alabama
Dame,
again.
Probably gotten would have probably
Georgia Alabama just 5 years early.
But
because this it would have been like Oklahoma.
It was Notre Dame, Alabama, Florida, and
ooh,
that was the final BCS ranking.
But you probably put
Georgia might have gotten in over Florida.
Yeah,
maybe
because of their show, and that would have been like the big.
That was like the Will Muschamp Florida team that had that great year, right? And then they immediately fell apart afterwards.
Like didn't Urban
that
just
Florida
peace
team,
out?
That Florida team, the flukiest teams ever, too. Yeah. Like, Florida would have gotten destroyed by Alabama. Oregon would have annihilated Notre Dame, and we would have gotten Alabama-Oregon.
Yeah. And then we would have settled some debates, probably.
And I think if we'd had the
close
playoff...
close to beating Auburn 2 years
I think before. If we'd had the playoff like do now... I was mistaken. Oklahoma didn't win the Big 12 that year. Kansas State did. I think there would have been a lot of pressure to put Kansas State in the top four over. I think back then they didn't have computer systems and they didn't care who number 3 was.
Yeah.
I think there would have been a lot of pressure to stay in it.
Really? Because I don't know. Because like the Big 10, I mean the Big 12 regularly kind of got fucked. Does still get fucked in the playoffs, right?
I don't think. See, I think the big playoff fuckery that everybody in the Big 12 still freaks out about is the Baylor TCU year where Ohio State jumped them, but the issue with that was TCU didn't win the conference. Like, they lost to Baylor, and Baylor had the tie. Like, they both had one loss, and Baylor had the tiebreak. So, Baylor won the conference, and then Baylor had that shambolic out-of-conference schedule where they scheduled, like, you, me, and 9 of our friends to come play Baylor. Like, we have forgotten because Baylor ended up having a much bigger scandal, but when Baylor was in the middle of being Baylor, the thing about them was they played these garbage schedules every that
yeah.
Like, they basically played the school of the blind every week for out of conference, and it was, you know, a total joke. So I don't really think there was
a
big deal about Ohio State.
I'm looking back through Georgia's schedule that year. I mean, they beat Florida. I think you have to put them in over Florida.
Well, they're
they have an extra loss.
I mean,
but their second loss came in their conference.
I just think they would have solved that problem.
That would have probably pissed a lot of people off.
I think it would have made a lot of people happier. I mean, nationally, because they would have said 4 different conference champs. Once you get out of certain parts of the tree, most people want 4 conference champs. They don't want two from the same league.
No, I kind of think that you should probably have to win your conference title to be in. That should have been a rule.
But they
playoffs,
can't do that because of Notre Dame. So Notre Dame, Notre Dame is the
fucks
reason
everything.
Why you get like the
ACC. Or you just do this, Dan. You just say, sorry, Notre Dame.
Just go ahead and join the Big Ten or the ACC and get off the pot.
Yeah, because we don't, and then say we don't need you. Because you don't, because guess what? College football does not need Notre Dame in 2018.
Notre Dame draws big TV ratings even now.
No, they do. They definitely do. But college football probably could survive.
Notre Dame, see, that was the thing about Notre Dame that season. Because, again, I was so immersed in Notre Dame then.
Yeah.
Notre Dame drew, like, the 5 of the biggest ratings of the year. Like, when you looked at the most highly watched games, Notre Dame was in almost all of them. So when people talk about, oh, college football's moved beyond Notre Dame, the TV ratings say otherwise. The TV ratings say Notre Dame is still every bit the TV draw that they've ever been.
Ooh. I think some of that, too, is that all the media's going to overhype Notre Dame, too.
But they just got more fans than anybody. Like, that's, I mean, it's not, the media covers them a lot because they've got more, it's not the other way around. Notre Dame has way more fans than any other program in the country because they are the only national brand in college.
Oh.
It's a regional sport, except for Notre Dame.
That's true.
They're the
one. Well, and it also also goes back to my thing of, like, why I just hate the whole conference. Because it is a regional sport. Your conference title should be good enough to argue about who the best is for the rest of it. Done.
I just want to get...
No need to say he's number one, man.
I think I'm now of, like, things, and let's have every conference champion get in it and then just play it out.
Yeah, that or just fuck it. Who cares? You just go back to old school SEC versus ACC in the New Year's Day Bowl, Big Ten versus Pac. And then, like, American versus Big 12, because he gives a fuck about the Big 12.
you're part of this whole, like, let's just fuck the...
Well, Big 12 shouldn't exist. Texas and Oklahoma should go to the Pac-12 or SEC or Big 10, and we should just get rid of it. It's stupid that we have a conference there, because most of those teams should just be in the American.
I mean, there's the line between Iowa State is really, it's not even a line. It's just...
Boise's a better program! Boise State is a better program than, like,
it might be most teams in the Big 12. It might be a more attractive TV property, too.
Yeah.
Like, Boise's not, about, like, the thriving metropolis. Sure is a hell of a lot bigger.
I mean, the only pro in the Big 12, Oklahoma, Texas, maybe Oklahoma State, and, like, TCU. Everyone else, Boise State's better.
Well, yeah, Texas Tech has a lot of...
They kind of fallen off, though, right?
But, like, just like, as far as a fan base goes, there's a lot
because there's nothing else to fucking do in Texas but watch people bash them randomly.
Especially.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Tommy Tuberville compared it to being in Iraq. Which it certainly endeared him to the fans at Texas Tech.
Yeah. But, Dan, let's shift back over to this game. And really the focus this week, though, since the game, is our boy Mark Richt. This is kind of the... Would you say this is kind of like the game he had to win to probably save his career at Georgia?
This was the Mark Richt's had a ton of these, and we'll go back and talk about some of them. But, like, Mark Richt, if you ask me to describe Mark Richt, he is a guy who took that program higher than it's ever been, but at every point where he could have won a title, something went the wrong way. I fully believe within my soul that if Mark Richt had coached in a playoff era, he would have 2 or 3 national championships.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, something would happen. He wouldn't make that top two.
Like, usually you would lose the game to South Carolina. Usually, like, Spurrier or Florida would fuck this.
It was like a yearly thing where either Urban Meyer or Spurrier fucked Mark Richt at every turn.
Yeah. Yeah. Spurrier's probably the more impressive one. He did it in South Carolina.
Yeah.
But you do run into that, too. There is
the thing that the SEC that, like, we make fun of the SEC, at least I do, on this show a lot.
Blasphemy, yeah.
The SEC that Mark Richt was coaching in was fucking impossible.
Like, yeah. Like,
if
so
you
much,
took those and, exact Georgia teams that Mark Richt coached that came, a game or two short, those, you know, every year it seemed like Mark Richt went 10-2. If you pulled one of those exact teams up and put it in, that's why I'm not that impressed with Kirby Smart.
No, because Kirby Smart just did what a Mark Richt team would have, because it was, more or less, it was Mark Richt's guys. When Mark Richt was fired, it was kind of a reloading couple of years for his program, which just happens over, you can't be a top-level program for 10 years.
Yes.
Unless you're like Alabama.
And if you had just pulled one of those Mark Richt teams up and put them in today's SEC, they would have gone, they would have done 11-1,
12-0. This team we watched tonight, I mean, the Kirby Smart team this year did blow a big game when they blew it to Auburn. They just got lucky. You know, Auburn was so banged up when they played them in the SEC Championship. And then they blow in the national. Like, this is what a Mark Richt team probably would have done if you're Georgia this year. There's not a big difference, in my opinion.
See, the Georgia people who are so excited about Kirby Smart, the downside to firing a coach like Mark Richt is you might end up with a terrible coach who kills your program. And it seems like Kirby Smart's not going to be that.
But he might just be Mark Richt again.
Let's hold up. Brady Hoke did go like 11-1 at Michigan that one, with Rich Rodriguez's players. So let's maybe pump the brakes a little bit. It could fall apart for him.
He has recruited.
Will Muschamp recruited pretty good at Florida, and he went 11-1. And then his team completely fell apart once he had his own players.
And there is like kind of the weird curse, we haven't coached in a major program before, and like your first job is a major program.
So
there's things you're not going to know how to do.
I'm not willing to go ahead. Like, Mark Richt did this for 10 years. Kirby Smart ain't done that yet. But if you pulled those,
and
you
do it, Mark Richt.
If you did, if you pulled those game, Mark Richt teams into this SEC, they would run roughshod over these.
Yeah, because you've got a Tennessee that's even worse. You got a Florida who's down. You've got a South Carolina who's back to what they probably should be.
South Carolina is back to like 2000 for South Carolina.
Yeah, and there's no competition in the East.
Kentucky
compared
is still
to like
Kentucky.
Back then.
Vanderbilt yeah. is maybe a little bit better than Vanderbilt was at certain points, but not at this point. At this was
yeah,
this
point,
was Vanderbilt the high point of Vanderbilt football.
Yeah. We're talking about and we're what the post Jay Cutler era too.
The James
like they had a big name guy. Yeah. And even like who you cross play from the West was probably a little bit better, whether it was LSU or even what
that LSU team was a lot better. Auburn is always like chaotic.
It's just Auburn.
Like yeah. they might win 4 games 1 year, and they might win 12. You just never know.
No, I mean we saw. I mean I think the best example is what happened the next year. I think Auburn was it? Yeah, it was the next year Auburn went to the national championship. They won 0 SEC games in 2012. So
you just never know with Auburn.
You don't know. You don't fucking know.
Auburn could just reach up and grab. You just never know.
It's a lot of fun. It's definitely a fun team to follow. I think like if we look at the end of Margaret's career, definitely a victim of circumstance. Like, did he blow it in certain situations? Yeah, I think he can blame that on his coaching too and certain things. I think like a big point in this game was what the right before the big go ahead touchdown for Alabama, he calls a timeout. And you think they're going to fix whatever was wrong, and then Alabama throws a 40-yard touchdown.
But I just think some of this is like, there's people just don't want to acknowledge how much luck is in football.
Yeah.
They want to believe that if you won the game, you were definitively better. And there's a reason why. Like, that's the way leagues market the sport. They want you to believe that every game is super, super important. And that you have to watch it. So, like, I get it.
But especially in football, yeah, especially in football, there's so much more luck. I was having this conversation.
Because there's no series. Like, it's all just yeah. the one game off.
Like, yeah, like, baseball is really the only definitive one because they play 162 games. You know, basketball, too, they play 82. You get an idea of who the best is.
And then
is.
In the playoffs, it's all seven-game series. Like,
yeah.
over
but
the course
football,
of a seven-game
you
series, you're going to figure out who the
best is. And that's generally like why I don't really love the idea of championships in football because it's just such a weird sport. Like, yeah, we can have them, but, like, understand they don't really matter. They're just yeah. – the championships are props. And we'll go, oh, Vince Russo in a year, bro. They just don't matter. They're things that make teams feel more important, situations feel more important, but they don't really mean shit. They really don't. Like, was Alabama that much better than Georgia this year? No, they just got lucky that their backup quarterback played a different style and was deep, you know? And the Georgia just literally shit their pants. Like, yeah. The whole team, you know? And in this game, they get lucky the Georgia player falls at the 4-yard line and can't go out of bounds. Give them one more shot. From the 3 with fucking Todd Gurley back there.
Yeah.
We'd see ran through some things. I want to shift over and talk about this Alabama team that we watched, Dan. How impressive was that front 7?
Yeah, this is a different Alabama than what we're used to seeing now, because this now yeah. Alabama's become sort of more of a finesse spread type option, RPO, pistol type of team. And this Alabama yeah. was just brutal. One back,
well,
H-back tight end.
This Alabama team,
inside
millennials,
zone.
Yeah, just, and the new ones, Generation Z, they're a little bit, they're weaker than us.
Sure, their muscles
They're twinks, yeah. Did you see the New York Times? It's the age of the twink, and that's what you got to run when your whole team's a bunch of skinny, hairless white boys, I guess.
Wait, the
New York You didn't Times see the New York Times article? Yeah. The age of the twink, because they're like, all these young people are skinny, and it's like, yeah, they're young. They're skinny and hairless. They're like 15.
Young people are always skinny. Like, that's how it works.
So they're going towards this age of the twink, and like, they're a little more feminine, but like, that's every generation in American history. It's a little more feminine over time, I think.
Or more like it.
Yes. That's kind of weird.
Like when people did the cartoons of like Little Lord Fauntleroy in like the 1910s and the 1900s, it's like there's nothing. Like, you know, people have been banging on about the same shit for decades.
Well, when I watched this Alabama, but you know what? You watch Alabama now, you watch them then. It's a bit more of a feminine style of play. Smarter, maybe better.
Well, no, it's more that this stopped working. Like this.
Well,
this
that's
style
what a
of
feminine would do. I feel like a female would change things
shut
up.
Down
yeah.
by people.
Yeah, especially like people they didn't expect, like Ohio State.
Like Ohio
I think
State
that
was totally
the, yeah.
brutalized them, and so they switched to like their version of what Ohio State did, which is like brutal pounding option football with a running quarterback, but you're really just trying to run like inside zone,
yeah.
and you're
it worked out pretty well. Wait, did Alabama beat one of those Ohio State teams? Right?
I don't think they did.
They lost to Clemson.
Clemson beat Ohio State
both times.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, I don't think Alabama's ever beat Urban Meyer's Ohio State.
Ooh.
They haven't played that much. They've played,
yeah.
They've only played the one.
Maybe this year.
And it was the straight through the heart of the South.
Bastard. My issue with that, Dan, is like, I think I'll hate a host in Alabama people.
Yeah, but you're weird for Auburn. You just hate Georgia.
Man. I am a weird. But I also live in Atlanta where I'm from Ohio State, and I literally hate most people.
Well, I mean, there's one.
There's one I like, and that's Dolph Ziggler, so.
Of all the people from Ohio to like. It's that fucking tub of shit.
And Lance Nix, former Cincinnati Red. And King Griffey Jr., wasn't he from Cincinnati?
Well, only technically. I mean, he was just because his dad was born, like, his dad was playing there. I think if you ask him, he's in Atlanta.
What did you kind of notice, though, Dan, about the way Georgia played football? Like, does it feel like the way Georgia's playing then is all that different from Georgia now?
I mean, they were a college pro-style system. When you look at Mark Richt, the way he had a very dumbed-down, easy-to-digest, to teach, easy-to-coach pro-style offense, very, very simple for the wide receivers and the quarterbacks to know what their role was. And he was still a two-back guy. He was still a big believer in a fullback leading the way for his running back. That was the big contrast between teams because both of them liked to run the ball between the tackles to set up their passing. But Nick Saban was a big believer in, like, the one-back offense where, you know, maybe you might have
a single-back.
You may have an H-back lined up in the backfield, like a tight in a fullback spot. Every now and again, especially for short yardage, but really you wanted to just get a bunch of meat along the line and be able to run inside zone and a little bit of outside zone, but mostly inside zone.
And a lot of stuff was predicated on like getting that guy to the next level. And usually Bama backs were pretty fucking good at the next level. I mean, we saw in this game.
They were very difficult for safeties to be able to bring down.
Yeah, because they're big. They're big, strong boys with big old thighs.
Basically, if you summarize, like, what this offense, this era of Nick Saban offense, it was, well, we want to be able to brutally run the ball with lots of, but then we also want to be able to throw four verts so that you're, you know.
Yeah.
We want to be able to release four receivers on the line down the field so that your safeties get fucked if they try to play cover three.
Which, you know, I think some of that was a bit of the difference was, like, Bama had Cooper to go to when they needed him, and, like, who did Georgia really have to go to? Post-AJ Green, they didn't remember they have that big play wide receiver that probably would have made a lot of difference, I think, especially in that end of the game. Because there are a couple of times where they try to go deep and it just was not there for our boy.
We got to talk about our quarterback in this game because, like, Is he not one of the more baffling guys who anything in the NFL to you? Like, didn't you think he was going to be somebody?
You're talking about our boy, David Green? I'm sorry, not David Green. Aaron Murray. Sorry. You know what, though? Because they were the same quarterback.
Murray was better than David Green.
Murray was better, but, like, similar success.
Yeah, I mean, I can't lie that, like, I thought
they're just like the Bama
something in the NFL, and he absolutely was not.
But look, I mean, I guess A.J. McCarron might have a shot this year at Buffalo. Probably not. But yeah, I mean, both these teams aren't really well known for pumping out great NFL quarterbacks.
Well,
in the modern era,
like Mark
you can point to Joe Namath. And
yeah, Mark Richt was like a conveyor belt of like future backup.
He wasn't a backup at the NFL level, but essentially was. You know, like Mark Richt's a guy I think today, if he came through, probably would have ended up being like a backup third string NFL quarterback.
Yeah, I mean it.
You know,
I just think. They were very good at having an easy to digest system, and then like quarterbacks who saw themselves because this was when you still had that dichotomy spread pro style that doesn't really exist anymore.
Yeah,
like you know, I mean, quote unquote pro style team at the college level still run the shotgun 50% of the time. This is still back when there was like a big difference between what the spread guys were doing and what the pro style guys were. And it was like if you were a quarterback who wanted to be in the NFL, you went to one of those pro style programs, and you know. If the offense might have been dirt simple, but at least you were under center, and that's what the NFL was looking for.
Yeah. Because I think, too, like, they just didn't get that, like, there's a reason Hawaii's quarterbacks threw for so much versus, like, maybe why a guy at Texas Tech did or Texas, you know, another guy running the spread and not kind of getting, like, I don't know. My point really was, like, why those numbers at all.
Well, the NFL had a tough time distinguishing from, like, what a spread quarterback was. Whereas, like,
yeah.
Drew Brees at Purdue, yeah, they were a spread. They threw the ball like 55% of the time, 60% of the time. Like, they were a passing spread that would run the ball occasionally as, like, to keep you off balance. Whereas, like, Auburn, Cam Newton, I mean, Cam Newton ended up being able to make it in the NFL, but holy shit, his college offense was basically...
Yeah. because we watched the Cam back, and, like, That offense was not really well equipped to come back. It really kind of speaks to how good Cam Newton was. And, or how well they used him. But yeah, both teams not really the best at producing quarterbacks. So AJ McCarron had a hell of a run at Alabama.
AJ McCarron's one of those guys was terrible as a freshman and a sophomore, but he was surrounded by an excellent team, so they still were able to win. And then by the time he was a senior, he was actually pretty good. But, you know, I mean, I was guilty of it too. Like, people like us were like, yeah, that's AJ McCarron's garbage. And he wasn't that good. Like, he was maybe the sixth best quarterback. I think the issue I always had with AJ is he was, like, the sixth best quarterback in the SEC. But because he played for Alabama, like, he would get talked about as, like, a potential Heisman. And it's like, dude, he's, like, the ninth most important player on his offense. I mean, he's fine. He's not bad, but he's not, like, they could replace AJ McCarron just fine. And they did.
Well, they did, and they did, yeah.
they easily replaced him. And before he got there, he followed Greg McElroy, and Greg McElroy had this press coverage. And then what happened? They replaced him pretty easily with AJ McCarron. Like, just it wasn't that hard to play in this offense.
Yeah, and similar to George, and two, both these teams are really good at getting like skill position talent. And definitely at the offensive line. But, like, everyone, there were athletes everywhere.
And it was a different era of high school football in the South, where you still had lots of whose offense was basically just, like, the I formation run up the, or, like, you know, one back sets and just run up the gut all the time. High school football in those states had not yet become, hey, we're just going to run the air raid, which is now.
Yeah.
Like, when you look at high school football, every high school either runs Gus Malzahn's offense, Art Briles offense, or the air raid. Like, that's it. Nope, there is no more, like, you know, and then you have small school run like the shit, like the wing tee or like the flex bone.
Yeah.
But that's what high school football is.
Yeah.
So it's now become harder to find linemen who are used to being in a 3-point stance a lot. Like they don't do it as much.
Yeah. What would happen later after this game, Alabama would go on, obviously, to obliterate Notre Dame in the national championship.
Which was maybe the funniest thing that's ever happened.
How, like, especially for Notre Dame people, since you were in the trenches, how, like, what was the reaction? Like, going in, did they think, like, fuck these stupid rednecks, they don't know how to do football?
It like was definitely, okay, I can tell you because I was in the middle of it, and this is when I learned something about when you cover. This was my first time, like having to cover it every week. Yeah. And I did learn something. You do lose your objectivity. You're covering a team every single. There are things that you pick up, and there's a value to it because there are nuggets that I knew that probably people who weren't watching the team every single game didn't know. But there's also, like, there's a reason why you always need to have big picture writers and reporters who aren't there all the time, who can then, you know, maybe get out of the bubble. There's a value to being in the bubble because you get more information than the people outside the bubble have. But you also have to be able to have that outside perspective. I thought Notre Dame was going to win because I had seen it all season long. I had seen them be counted out. I had seen at every turn they had, you know, people had said they can't do it, and then they had done it, and they found a way. And so I was, me and almost every other person who was close to that Notre Dame team was like, yeah, Notre Dame's gonna win. Like, they've done it all year. They're battle tested. They've got the stars.
Yeah, but because you didn't have that outside, like if you had been balling even just SEC football all year, you would have been. Oh yeah.
If I had been watching, I'd have been like, ooh, this Notre Dame team's a step slow. Like, they're just not gonna be able to keep up.
Like, it's a cute story, but.
It's like they're a Cinderella. There's a Cinderella team about to.
Yeah, how many cliches can we get in? The clock had struck midnight for Notre Dame.
It's just they weren't at that same level. Like, there's nothing.
Yeah.
I don't mean that to be insulting. I do have a lot of fond memories of covering that team. They just weren't at that level.
Because they were kind of like. Yeah, and it was kind of like that early success thing that happens. You know, when a good coach lands somewhere, it can kind of change the culture. But like. Saban have been really successful for what, like 5 years at this point.
They just didn't have the offense. Like, that was the real thing. Yeah. Like, everybody remembers Alabama just over Notre Dame defense, and that was true. But, like, Notre Dame could jack this shit.
Yeah, it's something when, like, you're playing defense after 2-3 and outs, and you're just like, fuck, we can't. What are we going to do for offense, you know? Especially when that team's good.
Like, if Notre Dame had had the offense, some Notre Dame teams actually have ended up having since then.
Are you saying if Brady Quinn...
No, that team would have been Notre Dame. Okay. If they had just had like
The team that almost beat USC.
Well, that that was the greatest team
of all time.
That USC dynasty was one of the most overrated things in college football history. Yeah, they annihilated all these terrible Pac-10 that couldn't play worth a shit. Oh boy.
And they beat one Auburn team too.
Like that USC era. I mean, it's very fitting to me that they ended up losing to Texas, who's like one of the most underrated programs, because that Texas team always got beat by one of these awesome Big 12 teams. And then when they finally got to the championship game, they finally won it, you know, behind Vince Young. And it's like, well, yeah, like that team was way better than any USC team they ever played. But anyway, we're getting off topic.
Yeah.
That'll be a future episode. Is that the USC Texas?
That's a fun one too. And we'll get to hear about it again because they play each other. We'll get a whole week of stories about that game. As for Georgia, the next year they would go 8-5. This kind of started the slide for Mark Richt, you could argue. And this is when Missouri started their run of SEC's titles. I think they won two in a row.
Yeah, they won the SEC East, like, two or three years in a row.
Yeah, this is about the time the East started really going down foot. I think next year Florida went 3-5 in conference
The biggest thing is that Spurrier's team started to recede because Spurrier's recruiting, like, Spurrier hit a line around the year where he lost the energy to go recruit. And so the talent level at South Carolina fell off precipitously.
Yeah. And at the same time...
He still had his, like, core of seed, but, like, the... kids coming in after this, nowhere near.
Yeah, and at the same time, Florida's being run by a guy who is a really good defensive coordinator, I think. And probably maybe one of the best and can change your whole culture on defense. But a really bad head coach in Muschamp. Tennessee is feeling the effects of multiple bad hires, I think, at this point.
Yeah, Tennessee is in the middle of the collapse.
That's how Missouri rises at the top. Over in the West, you know... Alabama didn't have the best year. This one, Auburn has their miracle year. That
LSU's slide is...
Yeah. And A&M's continuing to be underrated. I think I'm looking at their record. They went 4-4 in conference. So that was with Manziel. Probably at the high point.
Well, this year was their high point.
Someone there?
This was...
Yeah.
What happened at Texas A&M, inherited awesome offensive line from their previous coach, Mike Sherman, who was a bad head coach. And a tremendous offensive line.
But that offensive line sent, like, multiple, top 15
picks. And Sherman was an amazing offensive line coach in the NFL before he got the Packers head coaching. Like, that was what Sherman was famous for, his ability to develop offensive line. And he had developed a tremendous offensive line at Texas. And so when Sumlin got there, they just had this offensive line where they could do all of their spread passing stuff and have four wide every play. Their offensive line could pass for And they could run the ball with five linemen and no tight end and be able to move the ball down the field. And that's unheard of. Like, to be able to do that with just five linemen all the time. Those guys all slowly graduated, that's, you know, Texas A&M, someone just wasn't able to replace them. He wasn't equipped to.
Looking ahead for Georgia, I mean, I think the next year they would go on to not be so high. But after that, it was mostly 10-win years until Mark Richt got fired in 2015 for going 10-3. And being ranked number 24.
Yeah, because 10 wins just ain't good enough.
Ain't good. Kirby Smart won 8th the next year. I think it was, though, like, blowing the big game. Like, they got blown up by Alabama again. Like, Tennessee upset them that year, looking at it, and they lost to Florida. So I get it. These are the games that Rick... That's just what Mark Richt is, though. He's going to lose two big games every year.
The games that he was supposed to be judged on, he wasn't.
Yeah, and that's kind of what ended up happening to him. And probably what happened to Kirby Smart, because, like, I mean, you know, looking at this game and then, like, thinking back to the national championship, it feels like a Mark Richt team. Yeah. It's just what Mark Richt would have done. I mean, nothing has changed.
It's like
you can tell me it's changed.
About, yeah. The playoff thing is the only thing that's changed. It's like, instead of those Mark Richt teams finishing, like, fourth in the country and going and
winning the Sugar Bowl,
you know, they got play in the playoffs. They won one of them and then got beat in the second one.
Which is probably
what a Mark Richt team would have done in a playoff.
Yeah, and probably about what Georgia is. I mean, you know, I'm a famous Georgia hater. I'm not trying to be offensive here, but, like, that's what you're not as good as Alabama.
There's just a thing. There's a couple of programs that just have a higher opinion of themselves than they probably should. Georgia and Texas, I think, are the all-time two. Because
Tennessee for a little bit, but like they fall, like they're living in a cardboard box.
Well, Tennessee's figured it out. They've had enough time to figure out that they.
Yeah.
But like Texas and Georgia just have this inflated sense of themselves because they're both located in these states that have such highly developed high school football and have such great players.
And they're the kings of
and
those
states. And they're the most. They're the most notable program in their states, but there's, like, this thing they can't get through their heads that it's like, well, yeah, but just because you have this big advantage, this home cooking advantage, doesn't mean that those kids ain't just going to leave state if you're not good. Like, they're not just going to automatically come to Texas because you're Texas. They're not going to automatically, like, they're perfectly willing to leave state and go play because they're elite players, and they've been treated like elite players at high schools that have elite facilities and elite everything else. If they don't think you're elite, they're just going to go to USC
just the era we're in of new media, the Georgia game ain't the only thing on TV anymore, you know? If you want to watch, you know, if you're a fucking kid in Atlanta, you can watch USC, you know?
I just think there's a disconnect that Georgia fans and Texas fans have both always had with the fact, well, we're goddamn Georgia. We're goddamn Texas.
Well, yeah, and in the 70s, you're the only game in town.
But it's like, also like your kids are like used to playing high level, top of the if your college isn't producing top of the line football, they're going to look at you as, like, the little... And then go somewhere else where it's...
And, like, that's not an issue Georgia's had under Smart yet, but we don't know. I mean, they've had some good recruiting classes, but we don't know if that works out.
It's going to be like what happened to Florida. Like, if they have a drop back, they're going to fall
apart
the same way.
Their only big advantage is the East is so not good, but, like, the East is getting better. Florida made a good... A guy who won at Mississippi State, which is a little bit harder to win at than Florida...
If Dan Mullen starts beating Georgia every year, they're right back where they always
were. Yeah, and I would argue Dan Mullen's and that's not even a knock on Smart. I just think Dan Mullen's probably a better coach, similar to how Urban Meyer was a better coach than Mark Richt.
I think it's just going to come down to whether Dan Mullen can recruit at a high level, because it's been a long time since he was in that kind of a position, because at Mississippi State, they're just a... You never know how guys who come from low programs where there's this hard ceiling, how they respond to suddenly having more ability to...
Yeah.
But, I mean, he did coach at Florida before that, so it's not like he's never coached at your program.
Yeah.
So, I you know...
It'll be fun to watch, but I think the big lesson from the ballot of Mark Richt, Dan, as we go back and examine his career through time, will be that he's a guy... Oh, you won't. If your program's down, if you're Miami right now, you're really happy to have Mark Richt. But if you're Miami in 10 years, I get why you might want to get rid of him. I don't know if it's the best idea, but I understand.
I understand.
Because he ain't perfect.
But to me, to draw it back to last week's show where we talked about Nebraska, he is Tom Osborne. Like, he is this awesome coach who just had a shit ton of bad luck. But if you're good, if you win 10 games every year... Or almost every year, with very few, you know, fault. Where with very few times where you.
Or like your worst years, or your worst years are where you win eight.
Yeah, your
not
worst
six,
year is
but
like
eight,
seven
like,
and
yeah.
five. If that's your worst, consistently winning 9-10 games, you're eventually going to win a title if they just let you keep doing what you do. Or if they just
and who's
maybe,
to say he wouldn't have?
You know, maybe they get you a really good defensive coordinator, or maybe they, you know, Bill Connelly talks about this, where like. It's so hard to find a coach who consistently win 9 games that if you find one, instead of getting mad that he's always coming up short, you start figuring out, okay, what can we do to help you? What
make
can
him
we
better
do to get that extra step?
Well, Dan, I think this traces back to like another big problem in everything in America right now, especially in sports. So there's no leadership. Leadership, like the poor leadership in Georgia, was listening to the base and getting rid of Mark Richt instead of going, how are we going to make this guy better? Because look at where he's got us.
Yeah.
But instead, they listen to that lowest common denominator. Like, look at the NFL with the anthem policy. They listen to the beer-swelling redneck over there, the one booster, the redneck with money, telling you got to do this, instead of sticking with what was working.
Well, and I think...
And kind of examining the real problem.
Piggybacking off that, I think the biggest difference between Nebraska and the 80s... And Nebraska in the 80s was basically, like, they won 10 games every year, and they always got beat by Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Or if they did finally beat Oklahoma, they went and got beat in the bowl game. You know, that was Nebraska's life. And then instead of firing Tom Osborne, they stuck around. And then in the 90s, he won, you know, 3 out of 4 national champions. The difference, though, is that in the 80s and 90s, the athletic directors were lifelong college coaches who then moved on to administration, and they knew how hard it was to win ball games, and they had patience with excellent coaches who they knew could coach. Whereas today, all the athletic directors are dudes who raise money, and they're the where they react is, we're not raising as much money that, okay, we got to do something. That's where they always, that's where their locus always comes back to, how is this affecting our ability to raise money, because that's all they actually
need. Yeah, so I think it goes back to something this podcast did talk about with when Georgia fired Mark Recca, way back to the beginning. And this probably would have been like the beginning of the show-ish, right, when Mark Recca got fired?
Yeah, it would have been around the beginning.
It's going to be a major mistake. It looked good this year, but just because things look good 2 years in, a lot of marriages look good 2 years in, how's it going to look in five? And I think thing we'll learn is Georgia will regret firing Mark Recca one day.
Especially if he wins a title at Miami, which...
If he wins a title at Miami, which he could, because, like...
They could win the title this year. Like, they absolutely could. Like, last year was their big step forward. This might be the year that they, you know, they take the lumps. They, you know, they were good enough to be in the discussion for a little bit of last year, and then, they, you know, they were very young.
Or will Mark Recca continue to do what he does? Will Miami just be the new...
Well, I mean, if Miami becomes the new Georgia, and Georgia becomes Will Muschamp Florida... They're going to be looking at Miami and going, man, that seems a lot of fun. That seems like a lot more fun than being...
Yeah, these people are getting... Oh, they get to go to the Sugar Bowl every year? All right, honey, let's head on up to the Liberty Bowl.
Okay, let's go to
Georgia play Northwestern.
What's the game they play in Mobile?
Is that the Liberty Bowl? No, Liberty Bowl.
Liberty Bowl's Memphis. Don't you be talking shit about the Liberty Bowl.
I don't want to... Who wants to go to fucking Memphis in, what, January?
I would go to Memphis in January.
I'm not.
It's cold as shit, but I'll go.
I'd much rather go to New Orleans or Florida. Literally anywhere in Florida. Maybe not the Gator.
I would never go to Northern Florida. I would never go to any of the places where the bowl game is actually. Like, I'm not going to Jacksonville. I'm not going to Orlando.
Would you go to a bowl game in, like, Panama City Beach, Florida?
No, God, no.
Yes, that's where I'm going. But the bowl game's held in, like, April for some reason. I would go to
that. It's, like, 3 months late, and it's in Club La Vila.
the SWAC.
No, the people in Panama City are not welcoming the SWAC.
Yeah, who would it be reason? It's just Western Carolina playing like a team every. I'm sorry, Western Kentucky.
No, Western Carolina. That fits the Catamount.
But what's Western Carolina versus the Raging Cane? UL Lafayette. And they play the Panama City Bowl.
Lafayette are the only people who ever get excited about going to this bowl.
We went into this with cheese, right? Like, yeah, they're way too into their team.
Because they're up in, like, the northern part, like, where the actual Cajuns live. Like, no, they're outside of Baton Rouge, right? Lafayette's outside of Baton Rouge. But they look at, like, getting to play in New Orleans is like, we're
a big deal. So I think that covers part three, or part one, however you want to. We're not really going in order, because I don't believe in chronology.
Yeah, we grew up with Quentin Tarantino movies. They rotted our brain.
Yeah. This is the Pulp Fiction of football. Without the N-word. It's no N-word.
Because we're not...
Is there anything else, though? Yeah. Anything else we want to talk about where we kind of get out of here for the week? Like, maybe a little, like, got any ideas for anything for next week?
Well, Memorial Day was good.
I got an idea for something.
Hibby.
I'm not sure, though. I think it'll probably be on YouTube, but I think maybe in the honor of... LeBron remaining king, we go back in time to, what was it, 2016, Game 7 NBA Finals, Warriors versus Cavs.
Mm.
And watch one of the greatest, the culmination of one of the greatest performances in probably sports. Because with the NBA Finals next week, I want to kind of, you know, preview into that. Because, I mean, it could be your boy Chris Paul in the
God,
finals.
God, I hope
even though
so.
He's not playing
so
tonight.
Deserves it.
Yeah, it sucks that he's not playing tonight.
Oh, he's officially not playing?
Yeah, the game's already started. He's out. Rockets are up 10-9 with 8 left in the first quarter.
So they're slowing it down.
Yeah. So maybe go back and look at, also, Dan, the worst year ever, the year that we're stuck in for the rest of our lives, if you listen to Pardon My Take, 2016. So
I'm into it.
That's my suggestion.
Well, I'm into it. We're doing it.
They're doing it. And also, Dan, that was a fun night if you were a Game of Thrones or not. That was one of the best nights.
Was that the Red Wedding episode that everybody loves?
No, it's the one where, like, the one of their biggest heels got his ass kicked. A guy who cut off another character's cock or sent it to his family or something, I remember.
Oh, and then his dad got mad at him because it's like, well, now you just
he raped, and then he raped, like, one of the main characters. So, like, He got his, he literally got his face. That was one of the better nights up there. Sports and entertainment.
Was that a set? Have you ever seen Deadwood?
I've seen the first episode, and then, like, I'd never watched it after okay. that.
There's a moment in the last season of Deadwood where there's a character who's, like, the big, evil, scary, heavy for the main villain.
Mm-hmm.
He's, like, his enforcer type, and he gets the shit killed out of him. And it's the most satisfying, enjoyable thing I've ever seen in television history. As, like, the villain has to watch is his heavy just gets splattered. Mm-hmm. Like, just brutally beaten to death. And it's one of the happiest I've ever had watching television.
Yeah, this was similar to that. Like, when I was watching the same Game of Thrones, I sprained my fist because I kept pounding my hand into my fist. Also from this game, the 2016 Game 7 NBA Finals, I still think the block from LeBron is, like, one of the most memorable sports plays of our lifetime. Probably go down as that. So, it'll be a celebration of LeBron next week.
He's trash.
Our king. And also, Dan, this is the game that turned me, that series turned me from LeBron hater to spreading the gospel on our good king.
We are all winning.
Yes. So I'd like to talk about that, too. I think a lot of other people maybe changed their opinion on LeBron.
Well, he beat the unbeatable team. Like, there's just...
Yeah. The greatest team of all time and for his hometown team, you can't.
And I think that's fundamentally the difference between... I mean, that was a big story going around today, was Kobe Bryant tried to insert himself into the greatest of all time discussion.
Yeah.
Which is like nobody... this is one of the things that you've picked... When you go the greatest of all time...
You know what Kobe is, though, too, Dan? He's like the wedding crasher. I'm going to go Bill Simmons. He's like the wedding crashers. Like, really good at the time, but looking back on it now, it's like, oh, you don't...
Or anybody who says Larry...
And, like, you're kind of creepy and a rapist. So, like, that...
Sure. The way it goes with, like, these discussions is who you say is the greatest of all time says a lot about you. Whereas if you say Larry Bird, you're a white man.
Yeah.
If you say...
Or from Boston.
So the same. If you say, if you say, like, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or something like that, you're a pedantic jerk. Like just,
I do think Kareem is
just. You're just trying to like throw something out that like everybody's gonna be like, all right, okay.
But he won. That hook shot was unstoppable.
Yeah, I mean, you put him in today's NBA, and because they're able to zone him, and he's not, he can't do any of that.
Well, he can't. He's the best of his.
But
yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
You know, if you say Michael Jordan, you're a Gen Xer who saw him when you were a kid, and you can't let go of the Gen X thing. And if you say LeBron, yeah, you probably haven't watched basketball back when there's a good chance that you didn't watch basketball before it became cool to watch basketball. So you may not have the historical basis that like
so
the older.
So what's the proper answer, Dan?
Well, I think it's LeBron, but you know, I understand that people say Jordan, but I think the thing that LeBron is always going to have above Jordan is that, other than that time with the Heat, he was always playing for the underdog team and just dragging this group of like hapless idiots into the finals every year. Like even when,
and something Jordan never really did.
Like when Michael Jordan was surrounded by inferior talent, they went out in the second round. Which is the same with Kobe, because fundamentally both of those guys were not very good players.
No, and Dan, that's why if you ask me who the greatest player ever was, and he could have padded his stats better if he used a condom, give me Irvin Magic Johnson. Most similar to LeBron, too. That's why we'll put him and LeBron.
Lakers teams that he dragged into the finals that got beat by early Bulls champions, that team, if it's anybody but Magic Johnson, they don't make it out of the,
And Magic was a guy who, I mean, when played center in the NBA Finals when he played point guard.
I mean, Magic Johnson is the only player, like, Magic Johnson and LeBron James, only players, like, remotely.
Yeah, but you know what's wild with, like, Ben Simmons and Giannis? You got a lot of guys.
Like,
we're probably going to have more guys coming up in the NBA now who are more like Magic and LeBron than ever before. Not as good, but similar, where they're, like, giant men.
Well,
who, like,
we kind of saw that in the immediate years after Magic, where there was, like, this sudden influx of, like, big point guards because they
Larry Johnson, yeah.
Or Steve Smith. And none of them were that level of good, but or Jalen Rose. Like, they were that kind of player, just not as good. So I think LeBron's going to have this impact. We're just going to see a generation of guys who, you know, 6'9", 6'10", but they want to be ball handlers because that's what LeBron
is. Yeah. So it'll be fun. We'll kind of look at that and examine his legacy, because I think, like, yesterday's win really cemented it. And if you're rooting for the Celtics, fuck you. How could you ever root for a Boston sports team, no matter how fun they are? We all did it with the Red Sox in 02 or 04 or whatever. We're over it.
Because that was stop they rooting were going for up Boston against the Yankees. Like, it was, yes. It was the lesser of two evils.
Yeah. And with the Patriots, even that one in 2002 or 1 or whatever.
Because they were playing the most devastating offense team of all time.
Yeah.
Who were kind
and
of
the
dicks.
Celtics. Yeah. And the Celtics in 08, they ran against Kobe and, like, he caught him when he came.
Like, nobody likes
Kobe get
Bryant
it.
In the greater Los Angeles area.
Yeah. So I get
or
it.
Or China, weirdly. Like, Kobe Bryant's really fucking popular in China.
But haven't we learned, so is Steve Francis, but haven't we learned people to stop rooting? We should have learned from the mistakes of our past. Stop rooting for Boston teams, no matter how fun they are, because they're going to get boring, because they're good, and Boston fans are the worst fans in sports.
Don't you think Boston's going to be, like, undisputed team to beat next year, though?
Maybe. I want to see how that dynamic's going to work with Tatum and Kyrie. Because, like, if I'm Tatum and Brown, I'm like, I'm not taking a back seat in my progression now. Like, we're the guys leading the team, and how's that going to work? I think, like, with Golden State it worked, because, like, Klay Thompson, like, just likes to get high and play basketball. I'm not sure that's the case with Kyrie and Gordon Hayward. So, it's going to be interesting to see how those team dynamics are working.
Also, I want to say this. If Golden State loses the series,
they're down by 6 whole points right now.
I think that leads to like a reevaluation of Kevin Durant, because I kind of look at him as the reason why they've lost the series. Like, they're losing in the series because the knock in Oklahoma City always was, well, Russell Westbrook monopolizing the ball, and that's why they can't get a good offense, because Russell Westbrook is a ball stopper and Kevin Durant's not getting the ball. Like, Kevin Durant, when he gets the ball, has basically got to create all of his own shit because Russell can't create for anybody.
Yeah.
Dude plays for Golden State now, and they've had, like, all of these possessions that are just Kevin Durant posting up in, like, the high post.
Yeah, well, you know, that's bullshit. The wild. There's so much less fun to watch since they added Durant, because it isn't. And I think part of it, because he wasn't part of those teams when all these guys gelled together and became. There's something to be said for a group of guys coming up together. And all kind of it all clicking at once around each other.
Also, I just
you
don't
know, and
think,
you see it, you know.
I think he's just a ball stopper. He's a guy who wants to, like, and that's not the worst knock on somebody in the world, because that's what LeBron is. Like, LeBron.
No, and like, the, and look,
you know,
listen,
get everybody.
It's worked pretty well.
But it's just like.
Nicholas Alley got hurt.
I don't think it's not the best usage of these guys. Like, they've got so many good players, and for the ball just to get thrown into Kevin Durant and him ice just doesn't make sense with what they have.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun game to dance.
It'd just be very, very fun. I would just say that. Like, the,
now watch Durant drop, like.
Yeah, like Kevin Durant, like, they just let him walk, they trade him for something, and just go back to being the old Golden State team without him.
I mean, I don't think that'll happen. But you never know. I mean, I think this NBA offseason, penciling, you know, especially depends on how these finals play out. It's going to be one of the more fascinating, maybe, since 2016.
And final thought, there's no way Tag's not going to be shit, right?
Oh, you're seeing the ad for that, too? If I was in college, I'd like to see Tag.
It's all the heroes of, like, the early 2000s. Like,
yeah.
All together in a fucking mess of a thing.
Yeah. I get it. And like I said, if I was younger, I probably would be really into it. Now, I'm a little more refined. I would much rather go see, say, Ocean's 8 or The Incredibles 2, because I'm a real adult. So I'd rather see the cartoon or the corporate feminism bullshit movie than this. But yeah, that's where I'm at, Dan. So, but I think that's it for me. So
yeah,
just a quick, fuck the Queen. Australia, did you see the story about the Australian guy who, like, stole money from the bank?
No. Are you sure you're not thinking of the plot? To famous David Wenham film The Bank.
No, he would, like, pay his mortgage, and, like, instead of it, like, making him go under or, like, declining when he would, like, transfer money, he just, like, wouldn't notice it. It was like a weird glitch. So, like, he just, like, went on, like, a booze and drug spree within a basin.
I mean, that's just what makes sense.
Yeah, I think he got it right, because that's fraud. Can't steal. Worst person to steal from is them, because they have the money to go after. Always steal from poor people. Forget that.
Restaurants. That's who you steal from.
No, don't steal from the good people in the restaurant. Maybe steal
just,
from, like,
no, just like
chain
bad,
restaurant.
Look, it's just one guy in. Just go rob the cash register. They got all that cash
don't do
in
the,
there.
Go rob a Chili's or the grocery store. Or the liquor stores are great.
Do not rob the liquor store. They got guns.
You know who else you should rob? People doing home appraisals. They're sitting there by themselves with an iPad. You can get money for that.
Yeah, we've all got guns too. Like, every appraiser is strapping.
That's why you just come up behind them when they're not looking. Hide in the house, sneak past them, put a gun up to their head. They can't pull for their gun when they have a gun.
True fact. I have carried a sock full and ball. No, it wasn't nickels. It was ball bearing.
You got to do a sack of doorknobs because you can just get them at your job.
I literally just had a sock full of ball bearings. It was like, this is sketchy. Yeah. I mean, my boss was almost robbed at a house. Like, they ordered an appraisal just to get him at the house. And there was these two guys, and then he just noticed.
What were they going to rob?
They were going to hold him up. They were going to rob him.
Oh, but like, what does he have? Does he carry like a lot of cash?
I think
on
they
him
just
something?
Figured he was a wealthy dude. And back in the day, he used to get paid at the house.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Like, back in the day, like, the way it works now, it's worked this way since 2008. The appraiser never gets paid at the house by the person. Like, because they used to, what used to happen is a person at the house, when they would give you your pay, would grease you with a little bit extra to make sure it came they wanted to. So part of the rules that they changed all that is that the appraiser never gets paid directly by the person. They pay the bank and then the bank. But back in the day, you would go, like if you did five appraisals, like somebody might pay you in cash, you know, and you give them a receipt. Somebody, you know, you might have some checks on you, but you might have some cash in your pocket. And then, you know, somebody might have just figured out that appraisers have a little bit of money on because they're getting paid on site. And two guys, like, one of them starts, you know, one of them looked shifty, like, kept looking, like, wouldn't look him in the eye, just kept, like, looking down, and then the other one was kind of circling behind him. And so he just reached into his pocket and was like, well, boys, I think I'm going to have to go. And he bluffed him into thinking he had a gun.
There you go. Tales from Home Appraisal, our next spin-off podcast. The next Conrad, we're going
to... Yeah, that's going to be, like, our Patreon. Going to tell goofy stories about appraisals.
Yeah. We're just going to do appraisals, but instead of wrestling, we're just going to get people from all around the whole mortgage world to tell stories about a business no one can possibly care about.
Hey, now. Hey, now.
Not cool and flashy like the rest are the best. But I think on that note, Dan.
Yeah, it's time for us to get on out of here. Yeah. Fuck Golden State. Go Houston and play the music.